Oh, we got our first World Cup game in the third minute for today. Netherlands and Sweden. Love it. Nick Ashew on the Fan and the Team. No Team USA. It's going to feel... Here's the one thing that kind of sucks about, like, winning the first two games and already moving on is, like, the third game, we know they're going to sit guys. Anybody's got a yellow card or anybody, you know, is banged up or, you know, it's not going to be the full roster that's out there. It's going to take away a little the momentum of what they've built. But, you know, that's... It's for a bigger goal and it's for a bigger picture. And it's, you know, it's the same concept of, like, week 18 in the NFL and you're sitting your starters because you've already locked up seeding in the playoffs and everything else. It's, you got to think long term. And look, Christian Pulisic is going to be massively important for this team to really make some strides once you get to the knockout round. You got to get him healthy. So we know we won't see him for a while, which would just be, you know, if he's not healthy and can't play once they get there, that's brutal because, and that's the household name that everybody knows right now. Flo Balogun, I know, is going to get to that point. I'm practicing his name. See how I did that? Very well done, I think, maybe. Did I do all right, Middle Chris? Was it good? What does AWOD say, by the way? He's a big soccer. What did AWOD say? Do you remember? He's a big soccer guy. I need to
No,
ask
I don't. There's so many of those names that I struggle with, too, so I don't
on,
know.
Come on, Middle Chris. All right. Are you a World Cup guy at all or no? Like, be honest. Like, it's okay.
So it's like the Olympics a lot to me, where I like kind of just don't care until it's happening.
Okay.
And then I'm into it, but like I don't like the week before and the week after it, zero care.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, like in the moment.
Yeah, no, in the moment, heck yeah. Okay. Go Team USA, cool. All that. Like,
there
yeah.
you go.
Yeah, of course.
All right. All right. That's what I like to hear. This is good. Yeah. Because otherwise, then you just have midseason baseball, which is fun. And look, the Nats are surprising a lot of people, but come on. We want these big events. It's great. I'll take it. I still can't get over some of these, like, the amount of time that it takes to go to these stadiums and not just cover up the big signs that have the sponsors on them, but have you seen the individual seats at Gillette Stadium?
Yeah, they put tape over all the names.
Every single
seat. It seems
seat
just so petty. Like, who cares?
Stadium.
Like, it doesn't really matter.
They've been doing that with condiments. So condiments that have, like, the sponsor on it or the, you know, the name of the stadium on it, they're covering each individual, like, you will not see at all anywhere the names or the, you know, the sponsor names of those stadiums, period. You won't see it. They're covering it up on every little thing.
Like, who cares? Does it matter that much? Like, I don't know.
This is very FIFA. And look,
I know
get it
is. It's just, I just, there's so much other stuff to worry about with these games. It just seems like, are we really that concerned about all the seats having the word Gillette on them?
They like, want it cares? Nowhere, man. And it's crazy because, like, yeah, you're paying for the naming rights to that stadium, but FIFA's argument is, well, you're not paying for our event or sponsoring our event, and the whole world sees it, so therefore there's value in you paying for it to be an extra add-on to that stadium, and these companies aren't paying it, so they're like, well, screw you then. It's going to be Seattle Stadium, Dallas Stadium. It's, you know, so it, like, it feels petty, but I also, and not a fan of FIFA here, by the way. I know they're corrupt. I know it is what it is. But in this moment, like, I do understand that because they're making sure that they keep the value of the event and basically saying, you like, we know this.
Oh, they're making their money.
I know they are.
FIFA
they're
making their money.
They're upcharging fans like crazy for games that aren't even meaningful, and they're going to still charge you thousands of dollars. FIFA's not, like, I get why they're doing it. I'm not even saying it's right. What I'm saying is, to play devil's advocate here, I understand why they're doing it from a business perspective.
Yeah, if you're greedy, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, yes, FIFA's greedy. You know who
I
else
know
is? The NCAA,
are.
And they have no power anymore. At least FIFA has power. So, yes, I'm with you on that. But I understand why.
Well, I don't mean I like it.
Yeah. Oh, I'm with you. Again, this is not me saying, hey, big fan, good job, FIFA, you're smart. It's I see why they're doing it.
It just seems, I don't know, it just seems petty. Whatever. I don't care.
It is pretty petty.
Yeah.
But it's making sure they get every cent that they possibly can. I think we're going to get another World Cup in this country. I've heard people speculate in the next, like, 12 years or so.
I don't know, can't you just buy them? Isn't that what Qatar did a few years ago?
Yeah,
like, you just, bribe the right people and they can have it in your country?
We have the infrastructure for it here, though, and a lot of other countries don't. That's the one thing that I hate seeing is when, like, it happened in Brazil, right? So they had the Olympics and the World Cup.
Yeah, I remember.
But all of those stadiums now, they're just, most of them at least, just eroded and nature has taken over.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me to think that you can build these billion-dollar stadiums. There's all the money for that. And then it just...
I know that bird's nest in Beijing also, it's like just gone into disrepair because, like, they never use it.
It's it happens, honestly, it happens with most countries. Now, I don't know enough of what the infrastructure for the Olympics in 2028 in LA are going to be. I mean, they've probably got a majority of the infrastructure. I can imagine they're building other things. I haven't looked into enough of that to be able to tell you what it is or they're not doing, but like the World Cup infrastructure we had, and we're not even using our biggest stadiums. We haven't used any college football stadiums, which would get us, you know, 100,000 fans.
Sure, but I mean, they're using what? They're using Jerry World and SoFi and
it's
stuff.
Big. Like, yeah, they're big. They're big, but you, those are also newer
stadiums.
SoFi
is just an amazing looking place, too.
Oh, yeah. But you also have better amenities there, right? They're nicer, they're newer. Like, college football stadiums are big, but they don't necessarily have as much in terms of, like, it's not as fancy.
Yeah, who wants to go to the big house right now?
Right, right. Like, it's, okay, we can fit 110,000 fans, but it's all going to be basic after that. Like, you're putting your best stadiums forward, essentially. And, look, if we have another World Cup, let's say 12 years from now, let's just throw that number out there because that's what I've heard, we probably are going to get games in D.C. with the new stadium. In fact, I'd almost guarantee
that
that's
bringing the women's here in a little while too, right?
Is it going to be here?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's one of the reasons they wanted to get it done by like 2030. I think around then, maybe 2030 or 2031 or something like that, it's the Women's World Cup's going to be here.
I need to know that now.
I don't think it's only in D.C., but I think they're trying to have some of it here. I don't know. I don't know how far advanced they know exactly which stadiums they're using. But
let's see. 2027 obviously won't be. That's going to be in Brazil. Okay, so I'm not seeing anything new on that yet. So, I mean, that may be the case. Well, look, you can't have it just in D.C. Oh, no, here you go. I got some. All right. So future host for the Women's World Cup. 2027 is Brazil. Yeah, so 2031 is a big... So it's Costa Rica, Jamaica, Mexico, and the U.S. 2035 for the Women's World Cup. England, Northern Ireland, Scotland, and Wales. So they're starting to group it together a little more, which here's why I like this. As opposed to one host country. Now you're spreading the games out and you're allowing for, you know, all that stuff to already be built. Like, they're probably not building as much now because you have more stadiums in more places that can accommodate all of this. That makes sense. Also, if the entire World Cup was just in the D.C. area, so it'd be like D.C., Baltimore, even you'd have to build stuff. And we just can't, too much traffic and security, and it would be awful. So it looks like, because, I mean, you had Australia and New Zealand, which, you know, they're similar. That was in 2023. So it's just Brazil in 2027, which maybe some of their stadiums are okay, or they're going to go back and repair them. Because
Brazil has a lot of cities, too, though.
It does. It does. But like I said, they had the Olympics and the Men's World Cup, so you probably have... Maybe there are some stadiums that are still, like, they just have to fix them up. I don't know whether that was a decision, I'm guessing. But that's interesting. So 2031, we'll have Costa Rica, Jamaica, Mexico, and the U.S. So that's a lot of travel. I mean... You know, but they're doing that right now. There are some games up in Vancouver. We've had them, you know, obviously down in Mexico. You have them obviously in the U.S. on top of that. So there's a bunch of sites. This makes more sense to me. Having these games spread out a little bit more and into places where, you know, because Costa Rica is not a big country. Beautiful country. I love Costa Rica. But, you know, it's not like you could host an entire World Cup just there.
No.
So you add Jamaica and Mexico again to the mix for the women's side and the U.S. on the women's side. Yeah, that'll make sense. And then you'll probably have it at the new stadium. You'll have some games there. I mean, that's the point. You can't build stadiums nowadays that are just for football. Like, it's just not going to work anymore. You've got to make it an event. You've got to make it so it's people will go and want to be there for other things. You're going to have concerts. Yeah, that matters. Are there going to be amenities around it? Yeah.
I mean, at that price point, these stadiums cost now, you're just leaving money on the table if you don't.
You'd be insane.
Yeah.
You'd be insane to not make it something.
But no, we don't want Taylor Swift here. No, yeah, we don't need that money.
Is she still touring or is she finally done? I feel like she's just been on tour forever.
She'll never be done touring. I know.
Well, she had to break to go to a Knicks game because she's a big Knicks fan.
Well, so, no, I mean, you know. Sure. I mean, I'm not saying her tours are eternal, but like...
It feels that way.
She might stop for a couple of years and then come back and whatever. You know, it's like, that's what they all do, man.
Like, I think her last tour was like 3 years. Like, she's just constantly traveling. That's wild.
A lot of them do that, man. I mean, look at Metallica, man. Metallica's like pretty much always on tour somewhere. Like,
are they still... They're still on tour, right? Like, they're still doing
I'm sure they're playing somewhere. Like, if it's not here, it's like, oh, they have an Australian tour coming up or in Japan or, like, just something. You know, they play everywhere. Like,
it's, I mean, yeah, the stadiums now, it's why, like, Chicago might have the new Bears Stadium in Indiana because they're going to have space. They're going to get the funding that they need for it. It's just getting more expensive. So these teams, I mean, look, especially in the NFL right now, NFL teams have gotten so expensive. Everything's just gotten expensive that they're now allowing like private equity into own NFL teams. Like, it's not just going to be, you got to find owners. Because look at how, like, it took multiple. Josh Harris is a billionaire. He's really rich. And he needed other people to come help a little bit with it. Now he kind of had enough to be able to do it himself, I think. But, you know, they're adding more partners in with this. It's just, it's expanding so much. Stadiums are getting so expensive. And you have so many other needs. You also need the space. You need the space. It's funny. I literally drove by the RFK site yesterday. And I'm just looking, every time I go by it, I look at it and go, it just looks smaller. Like, it doesn't look like we could fit a stadium there. I don't know why. I know there was a stadium there. I know this one's going to be different and more modern, and I understand all that. But every time I look at that site, I'm like, is that enough room? It's almost like when you move either into a house or out of a house, apartment, whatever. You know, you look at a room and you're like, can we fit all the furniture in here? And then you realize, like, once the furniture's in, it's actually bigger than it really... That's how that site looks to me. It's the only site. It's where it should be. Everything makes sense. But it's just now that everything's torn down, I just drive by and I'm like, we're going to fit a stadium here? This feels small. I know it's a weird perception. There's got to be some name for it, some psychological thing. I don't know what it is. I'm sure I can ask AI and it'll help me out. But every time I look at that site, I just go, wait, oh, the Commanders Stadium is going to be here. Now, I know there's, you know, issues with some of the parking and tailgating and things like that that people have talked about, and maybe that'll change. I mean, I don't know if they're going to get rid of the fields across the street. It's probably a bad look if you start gutting all that, but you know, I'm not the one involved in those plans. But yeah, these stadiums are, it's going to continue to be more and more expensive and complicated. And what else are you going to have around the stadium that will keep people in that area? What's going to help build up the infrastructure, at least to sell that to people? Hey, pay for this and we're going to help the economy locally here. I mean, maybe you are, maybe you're not, but reality, that's what you got to sell. And you know, it's mixed use buildings and restaurants, and are you going to have a practice facility? That's the thing with the Bears too. The Bears stadium, their practice, I was talking to a friend of mine who's a Bears fan. He's like, the hardest part is not even going to be just the stadium if they move it to Hammond, Indiana. It's the practice facilities even farther away. So you're building all of it in one complex, which I have not seen enough of the plans to be able to tell you that, but that's the type of stuff you have to think about too. Which I think the Commanders, is the Commanders all in one, or are they going to keep Ashburn still? That I don't remember now.
They put a lot of money into Ashburn, so I feel like they're probably going to keep that.
I think they're keeping that, right?
Yeah.
So that's a little more of a drive for players, you know, but... Yeah, you're just not.
I think most of them all live up in Potomac. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But a lot of them. I mean, a lot of them have places in Ashburn near the practice facility because you're there more. So, or you're out in like Loudoun County somewhere. You know, it's NFL players and data centers. That's what you got out there now. A lot of that. But yeah,
some breweries out that way.
Yeah. You know, Loudoun County's right. Wineries too.
Oh yeah.
Let me tell you something. Wine country in Virginia does not get enough credit. That stretch. Down like 66 and all that. Come on now. Oh, man. They're great wineries. Great wineries. Great culture. Not enough love for Virginia wines. I'll just say that like I'm a wine connoisseur. I pretend. I like to pretend that that's actually the case. But, yeah, I mean, look, we it's not like other teams haven't had their stadiums outside of their cities. But that's the cool thing about D.C. We get to be a city that has every single stadium in D.C. D.C. United's there. The Nats are there. You've got even, you know, for the Wizards, thankfully, not moving to Virginia. I understand they were trying to build a whole complex. I get their plan. I understand it. But I want them in D.C. I love where they are, Capital One Arena. It's having every team in D.C. with the Commanders then moving back to RFK is just, it's perfect. It's what you want to see. And not a lot of cities actually have that. Now, the Pistons moved back into Detroit. They were in Auburn Hills. And then they moved into Detroit with their new stadium. So some will move back. It's, you know, and again, arenas are different than stadiums. Basketball and hockey arenas are just not going to be as big as stadiums for the NFL. And NFL stadiums are not making them as big, but they're still going
to
be bigger.
I feel bad for the Bears fans because I know how long it takes to wait for that stadium to go away to get another one because we've just done it.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, they're
going
through. And
that's what they're starting now. They're going to go on their little adventure like this, and it's going to be like 20-plus years.
Isn't it funny watching that and going, I remember what that's like? It's like watching a team that's still looking to draft their franchise quarterback. Obviously, we hope Jaden Daniels stays healthy and becomes what we saw his rookie year. We know the talent's there. But, you know, I mean, you feel comfortable at least in that. And I watch other teams like, oh, I know what that's like. Like, I got friends that are Jets fans, and I'm like, man, you got Geno as your Band-Aid quarterback. I get it. I know what it's like to feel that way wandering the desert.
Every year. Is this a year we should trade up for the quarterback?
Aimlessly,
I don't know.
Right? Like, it's every year. You're just like, oh, man, maybe this year we got our quarterback. Oh, I don't know. Oh, God. And it's like, so I get it. It was the same thing with the stadium where, I mean, for years, obviously when Snyder was still owning the team, nobody wanted them. So that was the talk about like going out to Virginia. And you're like, that's a dumb idea because you're going to lose everybody in Maryland. They're all the kids are just going to become Ravens fans. And we just, yeah, you watch these navigations through all of the political red tape and what fans think and what the league thinks and all this. And you're going, thank God they're just going to be at the RFK site and that's done. I mean, it really was. It was this like weight off of our shoulders as fans to just be able to say the stadium is official. It's where it needs to be. There's going to be things they're going to have to change, improve, alter, layer on. I get it. It's not going to be maybe perfect right away. You might want more tailgating space or whatever, but it's where it needs to be. It was the only site. It's the only thing that made sense. And they've, from what we've seen, the design looks great. I mean, these mock-ups of when you see when you're driving and it's right in front of you before you take the road around it and circle around. And it's just everything about it is just like, oh. So, yeah, I understand. You see it from what Bears fans are going through. And it's like, guess what? This ain't done yet. It's not even like they're moving forward with it in Hammond, Indiana. But you think that's not just a leverage play, too? It is, because we've seen it with this stadium and literally like every other stadium that exists in the NFL. When you're going to build a $1 billion stadium, it ain't easy. It's not easy. And then you got a politician or three that decides, this is my chance to make a name for myself and I'll fight this because I care about the people. You're a liar. I love when politicians use sports as a way to like build up their profile. Like, you don't care. Stop it. Focus on the real things. Anyway, Nick Hashew on the Fan. I'm looking at ESPN.com right now. It has their updated top 100 NBA draft prospects list. Guess who they've moved up to number one now? Darren Peterson. They've swapped Darren Peterson and AJ DeBonsa. I'm starting to smell something going on here. There's something cooking right now. Not that I'm the only one that's been saying this for weeks, but this is not just an AJ DeBonsa number one type situation anymore. Darren Peterson is the most talented player in this draft, and the upside is astronomical. And I think he can be a lead guard in the NBA. You know, there's a difference between like point guard. He's not like a facilitator as much, but he's a guy that you want, you know, the ball in his hands a lot. I mean, you see a lot of that. Kobe did that plenty, right? Look, the Wizards have a little bit of a wrinkle thrown too, because now that you have the Trae Young opt out, as opposed to picking up his option, which shocked a lot of people. That was actually, I honestly thought he'd want to play out on that contract year and look for a bigger deal. Some people were like, oh, wasn't surprised at all. To me, I was shocked. So maybe I was just wrong and misinformed there, but I kind of thought that was going to be a situation. He was going to ride that out, max out his value. And I would have put the Wizards in a better position because, you know, if you have the opportunity to maybe move Trae Young and Anthony Davis and get more back in return, now you've got to make the decision, unless there's a sign and trade with Trae Young. You've got to decide, do we want to give Trae Young a three-year deal now versus waiting a season or deciding not at all to do that? So that's now and put them in a different position, which in some ways could also alter their draft decision, right? Because if you look at Trae Young as somebody that you don't want to maybe pay that money for, like we don't want to give any max contracts, even a three-year deal right now, to anybody who want to get this young team really kind of come together and start adding veterans in other places, but not somebody of Trae Young's, you know, spotlight and guy that's going to take the shots that he's going to take and throw the assist number. I get it. Oh, he gets a bunch of assists. Okay. Like, he's going to put up a ton of shots. So it's like, if you decide that you don't want that for 3 years or you wanted more time to look at that, do you now consider Darren Peterson almost right away as your lead guard? And it's not like we haven't seen that before. Now, he's not going to be able to do that full-time. He's not ready for that. The handle's getting there, but it's not there. But, I mean, Dwayne Wade played point guard for the Heat his rookie year, and LeBron played point, and he still has his entire career, right? Like, he's been a lead guard, even though he's a point forward, essentially, handling the ball, bringing it up a lot, kind of running the offense. He did that when he was a rookie. He was 18 at the time, so it's not unprecedented. It doesn't mean that Darren Peterson would be that way the entire situation. You probably want to add a veteran that's going to be that case if you were to not give Trae Young a max deal. And listen, there could be a team out there. I know Trae Young's stock is down, but there could be a team that says, we need to sell tickets. We need to get butts in seats. And look, I said it as a trade, and now it might just be free agency. What about the Nets? What if the Nets come in with a monster offer for Trae Young because they just need somebody? The Nets have nobody on their roster. Like, the Nets roster as a whole is a collection of rookies that they drafted that last year looked like complete nothing burgers, or guys they might want to move, and like Nick Claxton, who is a good player, but Michael Porter Jr. at this point, you're going to want to, he's not part of the future. Nick Claxton probably going to get moved. Here is, I'm going to give you the Nets depth chart real quick. Raise your hand if you know any of these names. Igor Demin. There you go. That's a starting point guard for you. I'm looking at the current Nets depth chart. I get a lot of things are going to change. Shooting guard, you may know this name, maybe. Drake Powell. Now, Michael Porter Jr., you know that. Noah Clowney, come on. Nick Claxton, yeah, you've heard that name, fine. But, I mean, the rest of the we're talking Danny Wolfe, Ben Sarif, Terrence Mann, yeah, Zaire Williams, maybe. Josh Minot. Tyson, are we now, is it Tyson Etienne or is it Tyson Achan? Like Devon, anyway, doesn't matter. This is the Nets roster. They got nobody that makes anybody want to show up to a Nets game in a team that's been trying to rebuild, that had a bunch of first-round picks, that drafted guys that were just, they were all long shots. None of them had good rookie years.
I feel like the Nets are becoming New York's Clippers.
I think it's as bad as it gets right now, Metal Chris. I mean, it is, dude. Like, again, that's why I think
at least the Clippers got the claw.
They got something. I mean, but he might get traded. But here's the thing. At least the Clippers, well, the Clippers, once Donald Sterling was out, became a relevant franchise, and they tried to compete with the Lakers. But that's where the Nets are now. The Nets have the Knicks just winning an NBA championship.
When they had, like, KD and Kyrie,
yeah, they
like,
tried
they were trying
it,
to do something. But
and it didn't work. They tried to be the cool franchise. We've
work.
Got Jay-Z, and then we have this Russian billionaire owner. He's like, this is not going to work for me. I will now leave and go back to Russia. This is not good. And then it just realized nobody wants to touch. The Brooklyn Nets are the most irrelevant franchise in the NBA right now. Maybe the Sacramento Kings. That's it. Nets and Kings. That's it. Irrelevant franchises. The Nets is probably, well, the Kings play in a state where there's other teams that are good. Yeah, they're both probably about the same. The Nets are the irrelevant East team, and the Kings are the irrelevant West team. But if you're the Nets, what if they offer a bigger deal than the Wizards are willing to offer for Trae Young, and the Wizards lose him for nothing? I wanted to see Trae Young opt in, and then you consider trading him at the deadline, or maybe this offseason, maybe trading him to the Nets for that sixth pick, and give you Anthony Davis, too, on top of that. So that's changed things a little bit for the Wizards now, but make no mistake, there are desperate teams, and desperate teams do desperate things. Look at the Cleveland Browns and their quarterback situation. They are, the Cleveland Browns and the Brooklyn Nets, kind of similar. I mean, they really are. This Nets roster is so awful. Like, I remember at the end of the season, that there was that last weekend of the regular season in the NBA where everybody was just playing random G League guys, and the Nets were the most, I mean, they had the most offensive roster of them all. Now, it doesn't mean some of these young guys they have can't develop into decent players, but they had so many first-round picks, and they just all did nothing. I mean, nothing. Now, yes, maybe Darius Acuff is somebody that they'd rather have. Okay. He could be a Stephon Marbury 2.0 for them, and they'd love that, and they'd, you know, had Marbury was it when they were in New Jersey, and now they have that, so maybe that's something they're looking at. But they also could then go, let's go Darius Acuff and throw a bunch of money at Trae Young and offer him something bigger than what the Wizards are going to do. Like, this idea that it's a guarantee the Wizards are going to re-sign Trae Young is not true. Now, there are not a lot of teams are going to spend money this free agency, period, but there's going to be a couple. And you might see some desperation. A sign and trade could get the Wizards something, but sign and trades get you like a couple of second round picks. Man, I really wanted to see Trae Young opt in, and you have more of that freedom. But it might be Darren Peterson, number one atop that prospect list now for ESPN.com. The noise is getting louder. Nick Ashew on the Fan and the Team. How about the Netherlands taking a 2-0 lead? Nil. See, there you go. 2-0 lead over Sweden. I think they got it in like the first 20 minutes. They're in the 36th minute right now. That's the first game. Germany plays later. You know, you got Japan, Tunisia. I can't wait. We're going to start. There is a scenario. So we were talking about this yesterday when Zabe and I were doing the show. And there is a possibility. I think it takes a lot. I think the U.S. actually has to finish third in their group. But I think there is a possibility that the U.S. could play England on July 4th, which would be awesome.
Yeah, I heard about that. It'd be kind of funny.
That would be awesome, wouldn't it? Oh, the shirts that you could make. Winning, you know, I mean, the jokes that you, I mean, it's just, It would be so much fun.
The trash they would talk if they blew us out on July 4th.
Oh, well, there's also that, too. Yeah. So you're right. See, I was thinking on the good side. You had to go be the jerk and think about the loss and everything. Come on. We got to get it on the fever.
I mean, England's a powerhouse team, usually. They're not just one of the, well, you know, who knows what they'll do this year. Like, they're generally a favorite. Like, Germany and England, you know, those are power teams. Brazil.
Oh, no. I mean, listen. Here's the thing. I'm realistic with where we really are with the U.S. Like, I don't actually see them winning the World Cup, okay? So France is still the favorite. Spain is behind them with England, and then it's 6-1. Argentina, Portugal, Brazil, Germany, Netherlands, Norway. Then it's the U.S. The U.S. went from 35-1 to 30-1, so there's that. Yeah, look, I mean, I get it. I understand. I know we can say, oh, it's a possibility. And sure, it's a possibility. But France is really good. Spain is really good. England's really good. We saw Messi in Argentina. He just had a freaking hat trick. I mean, he's 38 years old. It's insane. Portugal, Brazil, Germany, Netherlands, Norway. Like, these are all, you know, some are, you know, more blue bloods than others. But, I mean, like, the Netherlands and Germany and Brazil, there's a lot of teams. That's a lot of teams the U.S. has to get through or, you know, hope get eliminated before they would see them. I'm not going to play that game. But what I am saying is I'm going to enjoy the moment. I'm going to enjoy this. Now, I get it. There are people who are saying, oh, winning the World Cup's not ridiculous. Okay. We can play that game if you want, but I'm just not going to do it. Chris Richards said that, one of their defenders, which is the right answer to say. I'm going to enjoy it, and I'm going to keep it at that, which makes it more fun. It makes it better, right? Like, we just kind of ride this wave for as long as we can, and then, you know, maybe build up the program and continue so more players like Flo Balogun are going to say, you know what? I don't want to play for England. I want to play for the U.S., and it's an opportunity for them to be stars, and then we start building up the program, and it's more fun to watch, and this is how this snowballs. This is how it happens, little by little. Yeah, it's weird, too, because, like, if, you know, to build up these types of, you know, sports, right? It's one thing. Like, the men's side is hard because you have more sports that get in the way with young athletes. You've got football, you got basketball, you got baseball. If you are an elite athlete and you're 12, 13, 14 years old and you're starting to really, like, decide what you want to focus on, and a lot of kids I get grow up and play a lot of different sports, but we know how it goes. There's a certain point where you get into that, okay, what's your focus, right? Good or bad, that's how a lot of this works. Elite athletes are still choosing football and basketball, and maybe baseball's in the mix there. Soccer doesn't necessarily get it as much, but you go to other countries where soccer dominates, the best athletes are, you know, depending on the country, it might be basketball involved too, but if you're 6'8", yeah, you're probably going to pick basketball. But for soccer, it's more likely to have elite athletes. You don't have American football getting in the way. And some of them, you don't have baseball getting in the way. France doesn't have that. England doesn't have that. They might have cricket, but, like, is cricket popular there? Cricket's popular in France, and is it at least in England?
And I know it's huge in India.
Oh, well, yeah. But I mean, like, is it big in France?
I have no idea if it's big in France. I mean, I know England, they're the ones that brought it to India, but I don't know.
Right, so it's big, like, in England. But that's the thing, right? Like, you have some sports that just kind of get in the way where if you're making a choice, you're looking at, okay, what's my trajectory to the best possible career that I could have? And, you know, you can maybe go pro or at this point, maybe go to college and play multiple sports or decide one. Guys are picking football and guys are picking basketball a little bit more. So it's something that might change if you can have a lot of success here, because there's that trickle down effect. Look, there's a reason why the NFL wants to build the game internationally and wants to build up flag football. Where are the different ways that you can get in front of eyeballs of young kids that are going to be a fan of the sport, that want to play it, that want to consume it, that want to become fans of a team? You're over in London and you're like, I really like the Jags. I'm sorry, we've sent them over for years and they were bad, but now they might be worth it. But you're building up these fan bases because it's harder to change habits of adults. It's a lot easier to change the habits and, like, viewing habits or fandom or whatever for a 10, 11-year-old kid. Like, most of my sports fandom started when I was around that age. So people get mad at me. I'm like, well, my childhood team was the Knicks. And they're like, what? And I'm like, I've talked about this plenty of times. I love the Wizards. I'm a Wizards fan, but, like, my team, my actual fandom started with the Knicks. I was a kid, and I lived in New Jersey. It's just, that's how you inundate fans or kids. Like, you want to become a fan of this or you want to play football? We'll start with flag football. It's not that dangerous. That's fine. Then you start getting people more interested in real football. That's the NFL's plan. That's what they're doing. So you can do something similar with soccer in the sense you're expanding the game, but it's just, again, it looks different. But for the U.S. to become more relevant in it is going to make kids more interested in it because they're watching somebody they can look up to. They see a Christian Pulisic, a Flo Balogun, and they say, these are stars, goal scorers, whatever. And it's like, I want to be like them. It's a tale as old as time. It hasn't changed. It's just how we consume that, you know, content of what's happening with these stars. We just consume it a little differently. But you have an opportunity to really grow the game. And look, even if they win, they lose in the knockout round, still was a fun ride. It's going to help. Like, this has already helped at this point, but you need a little bit more. You need a little more of that consistency moving forward, and it's going to go, I think, a long way for them. And it's like ride the wave now. That third game, you're not going to have as many you're going to have guys that don't normally start getting an opportunity, which could be a good thing, too. But, you know, it's going to start once you get to the knockout round, and it's going to make a huge difference, I think, for this program if they can continue to win, because that lasts with people. And come on, we like jumping on the bandwagon a little bit. That's okay. You can do a little LARPing, a little faking it. It's okay. Using LARPing a lot since I learned what that word means. Big fan of it. It's worked well. Works a lot in sports, right? I mean, really, Chris, you can't tell me it doesn't fit a lot of things in the world. I mean, it's great.
Sure. I guess it's become more common parlance or whatever.
Yes.
This has been a nerd term for going back since I was a teenager. Oh, but
I've never used the term LARPing before until recently. So I'm jumping on. I'm LARPing. Being a LARPer, I'm not going to play this game again.
Oh, man, I remember going to Denny's and there'd be kids LARPing in the Denny's and stuff, and you're just like, ugh.
How were they LARPing?
It's a game you play. It's a type of game.
Oh, well, isn't it like you're just faking it, though? It means like you're faking things.
Yes. It's like people that took D&D even farther, so they're like, all right, let's get rid of all the dice, and let's just like go walk around and play the game. Like you would play like in a field or something or whatever, and you'd be a character, like you'd be in character. But then people are like, well, why do we have to just do it out in a field? We could just like go walk around the mall and be in character, and then you're just like normal people. You're just like, I don't want to deal with this. This is
See, now you've taken, wow, you've blown my mind. Yeah. I didn't even know this was a thing.
Yeah. It's like a lot of the drama kids got into that stuff, which is not really my thing, but I was very aware of it, but I was just like,
So they would go and play characters from like Dungeons and Dragons.
Yeah, like you make a character and things, and yeah, and then you'd be in character and you'd walk around and talk to other people also in character. But you could do it in the real world was like part of it. So
it's kind of
what makes
like,
it live action. It's a live action game. So.
It was pre Pokemon Go where you're finding the Pokemon in real life.
You don't need computers or anything. You just it's like.
You know what? I applaud the imagination. If one of them walked up to me and started talking in character and I wasn't at RenFest, sure. I'd be like, well, okay, maybe that's just a little weird.
Sure, but I mean, you can see like the drama kids were all into that, right?
Sure.
Like,
and you know what? It's actually probably great practice for them. If you want to be a good actor, that's a great way to do it.
Sure. It's just annoying when you're like at a restaurant and then people are all doing that crap.
I've never seen this before. I'm disappointed now. I'm going to see it. Now that it's been spoken, we've put it in the universe, and I'm going to see kids LARPing somewhere. Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know how popular it is anymore or not. I don't know. I don't know.
All right. Well, I'm not an
expert on it. I'm really not. I never got into it, but you know, I played D&D as a kid, so I was aware of it, but I just never, that was never my scene. So.
But you were the basic level of Dungeons and Dragons. You weren't like
I got more into Magic the Gathering, the card game, the predated Pokemon. That was the angle I went in, so I just, you know, you can't do everything. So.
No, that's true. You gotta, sometimes too, if you got a certain interest, you're just gonna stick with it. And it's that simple. So, all right, well, LARPing is a real game now. Interesting. Maybe I should bring it back.
It always was.
Do you want to bring it back with me?
It's a style of game. It means live action role play. That's what LARP is.
Oh. Man, you gave me more details than I got last week on this when I learned about it. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, that's what it is. That's what it means. It's an acronym or whatever.
Okay. So. All right. Well, I got some deep knowledge. I'm going to spread the knowledge on LARPing. We're going to bring it back. All right. You and I are going to get in character and we're going to walk around DC.
Yeah.
You down for that?
Well, we're going to be like wizards and.
Man. It's like RenFest, but out of season.
Yeah. you can be G-Wiz.
There you go. That's fine. We'll do some LARPing just with team mascots. That'll be easier. All right, cool. Nick Ashew on the Fan. A lot of people love ranch. I'm a fan of ranch. People from other countries coming to the U.S. apparently love ranch more. It's gotten to the point where if you're visiting for the World Cup and trying to leave with ranch in your carry-on bag, TSA is stopping people. We all know the liquid size, right? That's a thing. people are apparently obsessed with ranch, which shouldn't surprise you, right? We take it for granted sometimes if you love it. I guess it's not a thing overseas like it is here. Didn't know that. Kind of thought it was just everywhere. But
because they're on a Maramite.
They're what?
They're on a Maramite.
What's Maramite?
Ah, man, it's their thing.
Maramite?
It's a spread or something. I don't know what you call it. Yeah, man.
Oh, I need to
know.
You
never heard
of
this stuff in like Vegemite and like whatever? Ah.
Oh, I know what Vegemite is.
Yeah, that's like the vegetarian version of it.
Oh, well, that doesn't
something.
Sound
fun. I don't know. I'm no expert on European
Maramite.
Food, but.
Let's see. All right. It's a sticky, dark brown, savory food spread made with yeast extract, a byproduct of beer brewing. Oh, okay. Originated in the UK. Marmite. I see it. But that's nothing like ranch, though. This is unique what
but
we
that's
have
what
here.
They put on all their food over there is what I'm saying.
Yeah, boo. Now it's this is great for Kraft because you know what Kraft just did? And I know there's a lot of different ranch companies. They are making a TSA-friendly size ranch that you can take with you. But again, if you check bags, then you just put all the ranch that you want in there. Can't you just order this online? I still just feel like nowadays we have access to everything with the internet. You should be able to just order ranch. Is it not that easy? Maybe they're just discovering it and going, oh my God, this ranch is amazing.
Well, Kraft is an American-based company. So,
yeah,
I mean, I don't know
overseas.
If there's European-based companies making ranch.
I see Kraft food or Kraft stuff over in other countries every time I visit
somewhere.
I see it there.
But you're going to have to deal with importing at a certain point because it's not just
true.
As cheap at that point to send anything overseas. So
I guess I just felt like ranch was so basic that it would be everywhere around the world because
it's
they would
like
make
cucumbers
sure.
Cucumbers and mayo or something, right?
Like, yeah. Do you like ranch?
It's fine. I can tolerate it. Not my favorite.
I am a ranch on pizza guy. Like a really good New York pizza, but like, you know, a basic pizza. Yeah.
I like stuff that has like flavor.
So. Whoa. Now we're getting to some blasphemy here. There is flavor,
you know,
in ranch, my friend.
Yeah. I just like mayo and ranch. Those aren't for me, man. I want stuff like give me some sriracha. Give me something with a little heat. I love Cajun seasonings, Old Bay, that kind
of
stuff.
Well, I love all three of those. Everything you mentioned is also good. So now. Sriracha ranch, my friend. See?
I'd rather just have sriracha.
But there's it's
like, why dilute
though?
It? Huh, why okay. Dilute it with ranch?
Yeah, but you're getting a mix of flavors, see?
Yeah.
See, I think this is the difference. I think when I was a kid, well, I know when I was a kid, I was the mix a bunch of sauces in the cafeteria on your lunch tray together. You clearly weren't, were you?
I don't know. There's like certain, like I'll tell you this, like I don't like yellow mustards really at all. I love a brown mustard, lots of seeds and that kind of stuff in it. I don't care about French's. I hope they're not a sponsor. I don't care about yellow mustard at all. It does not do it for me.
I get it. I like both kinds.
I
think a brown
like a
is
kicker,
a little bit more.
A little bit of something to it,
uh-huh.
You know? Like,
so you like spicy food?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Are you a barbecue sauce guy?
Yeah, I like barbecue, yep.
All right. Do you like it more spicy barbecue, or do you like a sweeter barbecue?
More spicy than sweet. Yeah,
so
sweet
spicy
ones,
everything.
The sweet ones all get sticky too. They all have like honey and crap in them.
They can. They can. It depends on where it is. So you just want spicy everything. Then.
I like a lot of spicy food. Yeah,
okay.
But it doesn't like have to be like I like Old Bay. That's not spicy. Like,
no,
it
no,
is
no.
A spice, but it's not spicy.
Yes.
Like,
yeah. No, I know what you mean. Know. You like hot food. I mean, listen. Yeah.
I love Cajun. Like Cajun's my like anything covered in Cajun stuff. I'm gonna eat.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
Blackened fish, that's the way to eat fish, man.
Oh, yeah, man.
I want that flavor. So, no, I get it. And, like, ranch gets made fun of, but come on now. Oh, ranch on, like, a pizza crust? Yeah, I'm in. I'll do it. I'm definitely,
See, I'm in the hot honey club for the pizza crust now.
Mike's
Hot Honey's gotten me onto that stuff.
I've tried the hot honey with pizza. My wife will do it. I'm not really... Like, well, I'm like a pepperoni pizza. So here's the thing with me with pizza is I'm very simple. I don't want like a fancy pizza because if I'm going to eat pizza, it's a cheat meal for me. So I'm like, I'm going to just enjoy pizza. But I do like ranch on like the crust. And that's, you know, but like I tried the hot honey. It just doesn't.
Hot honey on a crust is like killer to me.
Yeah, I prefer ranch or like just like sriracha. I'll put sriracha or another kind of hot sauce maybe on the crust. But I won't, like, hot honey just had, I wanted to try it when I saw it for a while, they're marketing it, like, oh, it was hot honey on a pepperoni pizza.
Well, Andy's has that over here by the baseball stadium, so I get that for lunch sometimes around here.
I bet you there is, like, a combination of something with hot honey, because I like sweet and spicy, like, I like the combination, it's just, I haven't been able to find it on, like, pizza specifically, where I've liked it enough to go, this is what I would choose versus
well, like,
the regular
like some they
pizza.
Put it like on the pizza, like on all the toppings, that's kind of fine, but like it's the crust is where that stuff shines for me.
Okay.
So it is a crust condiment to me.
All right. Maybe that's where I'm missing it, is just the crust and nothing else. Now, it probably can't be stuffed crust, right? I bet the cheese wouldn't taste good with it, or would you do it with
the
cheese?
I don't know if you can do it that way. I don't know. Okay. But I've never tried, so.
Well, now I feel like you need to. We can, and report back.
I know.
Metal Chris's Hot Honey Report. Here we go. All right, maybe not that, but yeah, I've tried. Ranch is clearly popular. I mean, there are pictures of people just getting tons of bottles of ranch getting pulled out of their bags going through TSA going back home. This is great. I cannot get enough of this content of just people visiting the U.S. And listen, and in some ways, it's kind of cool. It's like, oh, yeah, kind of took that for granted a little bit. You don't have ranch where you are. We like it. It's good. And granted, some of this stuff is because, you know, there's ingredients in these foods that are banned in other countries. But here they're like, nah, sure, eat the poison. I get it. Ranch ain't great for you, but you got to have some vices in life. Then this comes from somebody that cares about what he eats. There are times where I'm like, look, I just want to enjoy something. You got to live, too. Got to live. And clearly, Europeans are living with ranch, and I don't blame them. Nick Ashew on the Fan.